Good morning. So last time we talked a bunch about how pointers worked. So pointers were kind of the closest thing we've seen in C++ to references in Java, but they expose a little more of what's going on under the covers. So pointers contain an address, and we have to explicitly either get the address of a value using this ampersand operator, and when we have an address, typically in a pointer, we use the star operator to use the thing that is at that address, to get the thing that's being pointed to. And when we do that, we can assign to the value that's at that address, or we can read the value that's at that address, or we can call methods on the value that's at that address. We can do everything we could do with the original value as if we were naming the original variable. We also started talking about new and delete, which were the ways we allocated space that wasn't just a local variable, because we learned that, unlike in Java, when you have a local variable, yes, you can get a pointer to it, but when the function returns, that pointer points to something which doesn't exist anymore, you can't use that pointer. You try to, well, maybe something else goes at that address because the compiler decides to reuse that part of memory. Or maybe it doesn't, who knows? So any questions about anything we covered last time? Yes?
I'm still unclear on how you would implement a swap function.
To implement a swap function? So the question is implementing swap. So the reason we would use pointers to implement swap is that if I write this bad swap function, let's say I want to swap two ints, B, it doesn't matter what I do here because this is a local variable. So what I'll instead do is I'll write a swap function that is not a bad swap, where I take an int A and a pointer to A and a pointer to B. And now I can modify star A and star B. So what we typically do is we'd store one of these in a temporary variable, then overwrite the other, then use the temporary to set that. And this would be as if I had written the, what A points to. This would let me call this and actually have the thing I pass pointers to be modified. Whereas if I do the version where if I just put int A, that's not going to work. Because I'm going to get my own copy of A, which is different than the one that's passed in. So it's going to make a copy. So that's how we do it. So it's the same, the uses of star A are the same as if we were writing it in line with whatever we get passed a pointer into. Is that clear enough? Okay. Other questions on what we covered last time? And we'll talk about swap later again when we talk about an easier way of writing it that's perhaps more intuitive with what C++ calls references. Okay, so first, a brief note. So someone during office hours pointed out that we saw this weird thing in your lab, if you were paying attention, that you had this method declared in the middle of a class, and apparently it was okay to put that in a header file, even though that header file would be included multiple times when we compiled our program, so we'd have multiple copies of the method, and yet the compiler didn't complain. And I kind of promised to you that if you had multiple copies of a function, you'd expect it to complain. And what's happening here is that when you have it implemented in the class declaration, this is a special case. It's allowed to have multiple copies, even though it's in multiple C++ files. And what happens under the covers is that probably you have one copy of the method for each C++ file. Every time you compile a C++ file that includes this header file with this method in the class declaration, we're going to recompile it each time. So you probably shouldn't do this for a big method, or else your compile times will go way, way higher. But for something like these accessors, it's ideal because like, that's very trivial to compile. We're not really worried about wasting time compiling it lots of times. And technically, you can actually do this the same thing outside. So there's a keyword that we will not use called inline, which makes the is the same as putting the method inside the class itself. It lets you have it in your header file if you want to do that for some reason. Note that if you do this, it has to be included in every C++ file that uses the class. You do not get the luxury of not having it in every C++ file that uses the class. It has to be always available, or else the compiler could do something wrong. So we will not use this the inline keyword, but we will sometimes do this syntax just for short methods, because why would I bother writing the accessor in my C++ file when it's that trivial? So any questions about that? Yes. So the question is there any way of knowing what you can and can't do that with? You technically can do it with anything. It's just a matter of how much it's going to increase your compile times and the sizes of intermediate files and things like that. Yeah?
So after you implement it in the H file, it will not appear in the CPP file?
So the question is, after you implement the H file, you wouldn't have a copy of it in the CPP file, yes. Of course, when you compile it, each time you compile a CPP file that includes the H file, it's going to have a copy of it. It's going to be generated by the compiler. Okay. So that was what's going on there. So let's talk, go back to our last time. So last time I talked about our problem of, you know, we wanted to return a large value. And if we do the straightforward thing, because these are values, not references, in C++, this would copy the value. So the simple idea is that you just make a local variable and return a pointer to it, but that doesn't work because it turns out that 2/3, this local variable, goes away as soon as the function returns. C++ doesn't figure out, oh, you have a pointer to it, I shouldn't get rid of it. Doesn't do that for you. It just goes away, and you've now returned a pointer that doesn't make any sense. So our solution instead is to use this new operator, which allocates space somewhere, and that we can return safely. So now we have a pointer. We're just copying the address, not copying the actual values when we return, definitely. But we have to allocate space somewhere to do that. And part of allocating space somewhere is that when we stop using this value, we have to tell the compiler explicitly, get rid of it. We have to give a delete instruction. Otherwise, like in this case, we're going to call show 2/3, we're going to print out the value, then when we go on in the program, we still have a copy of 2/3 allocated somewhere in memory. We don't have a pointer to it, but the compiler is not going to figure that out for us. In Java, part of what the Java implementation will figure out is that, oh, you don't have any references to this thing, I'm going to get rid of it. In C++, that's not going to happen. It's only going to get rid of things when you tell it, get rid of it. So otherwise, this is going to be a memory leak. We're just going to have this thing we can't reach that still takes up space. And if you do this a lot in your program will use all the memory in your machine. And this is probably what's happening if you've ever had a program that seems to keep using more and more memory for no apparent reason. And so what we typically do is do this delete operation. And after we do that, it doesn't change the pointer, but the thing it points to is no longer allocated. That memory might be reused, so we can't use the pointer anymore. And note that it doesn't change the pointer. So a lot of people think, well, why doesn't it make it null? Well, it just doesn't. The big justification for that is you might have another pointer to it. So like making it null doesn't actually solve the problem of accessing things that are deallocated. There's still plenty of ways you might accidentally access things that are deallocated. You need to have the discipline to organize your code so that won't happen. Yes?
Is there a way to programmatically see if that pointer's been deleted?
So is there a way to programmatically see if a pointer's been deleted? So generally, no. And the big reason why is if you allocate another rational, the implementation might decide, I'm going to use the same address for it. And so even if we had a call, which probably does exist, to say, is this allocated space, it won't give you what you want to know, which is not, is that allocated? You want to know, was it allocated for the thing I thought it was allocated for? Okay. So this is allocating single things. So let's talk about arrays. So C++ has arrays. We haven't actually shown you them, I think. So this is what a simple, not allocated with new array is. So this array is just a local variable, like that simple non-pointer two-thirds I showed you earlier. It goes away when the function ends, and it has a fixed size. And we can access elements of this array the same way you would do in C in Java. You can use this syntax even for an array of classes, in which case each element of the array will be initialized with the default constructor. And accessing elements of the array works like in Java. Use the brackets and a number. So yeah, I'd say, okay, so that's how you make arrays. So let's say I want a variable-sized array. So it seems like I should just be able to put like a variable in place of that 10. And if you try that, the compiler's going to complain. So putting a variable-sized arrays that are declared that way are not part of C++. You need to do something else. I'll tell you what that is in a second. Some compilers support it as an extension, some don't. We're not going to allow it in this class because it's not part of C++. And more importantly, perhaps, we would like to know how to allocate arrays that exist when the function still returns, which this won't, even in compilers that support the extension, because this is a local variable. When the function returns, that space is going to be reused for something else. So we can use new to allocate arrays of variable sized. And you've got a pointer, not to an array, but to an int. And you can use that pointer like an array. So this pointer points to the first element of the array, and I can use the bracket 0 to access the first element. And the next element is right after it in memory, has the next memory address. In this case, that's 90,004 because ints are 4 bytes and addresses are in bytes. So that's the next memory address, and I can access that with ages of 1 and so on. So I can just use this syntax to access each element I want to. Just like this pointer was an array, as far as the syntax goes. But it's actually a pointer, just to the first element. This is something we can do with pointers in C++. So any questions about what I'm showing here? So just like I had the examples with a single value we allocated with new, this value will stay around until we delete it. So we can return this pointer from a function and use that array in the function we return to. It will still be there. And we need to eventually get rid of it or else we're wasting space. And in this case, it's a little more urgent because depending on how big n is, we could be wasting a whole lot of space. And you would probably think that, okay, we're going to use delete ages. And bizarrely, that isn't quite true. We use this syntax with two brackets and delete. And the justification is here that C++ thinks that it's going to have to track a little extra information about arrays to know their size versus normal values, so they have a different delete operator to allow the implementation to do that. So there might be a different way of figuring out how much space am I freeing up to be reused, depending on whether it's an array or not. So you have to use a different delete operator when you're deleting an array you allocated with new. So you can, here's an example of what this might look like. So you can allocate our array of n ages, and then you can just use it like an array. You can write to it, you can read from it, you could do math on it. It just acts like a normal array you would expect in Java. Okay, so any questions so far? Yes. Is there a reason you wouldn't use an array allocated with new versus the other kind I showed? So if you have something of fixed size, the other kind is, it's less code, and it's probably a little faster. And you don't have to remember to delete. Later on, we'll learn about something equivalent to the ArrayList class in C++, and that's often what you'll use instead of this in practice. Or other classes like that. Just like in Java, you typically don't use raw arrays, you use something else. Some class that's built on top, presumably, of raw arrays. Okay. Other questions about this? Yes?
So what's the point of putting a star in front of ages?
So the question is, why do I have a star here? So the question is, so what would you like to do instead? Okay, so if I do int ages equals new dot, this is an error because new returns an address and I can't put that in an int and use it usefully. So what's new is returning here is an address of the first integer in the array. And we need that address. We need it to be an address because we don't just want to access that first integer, but the things at other related addresses. So we definitely need an address to do that. Other questions? Okay, so I've showed you some simple examples of new. Let's just go through sort of things you can do with new. So, there are different new syntaxes. So you can do new int, and that creates a new int. So I showed it with rational because most typically you won't be allocating single integers because usually that doesn't make sense to do, but you can absolutely do that. And this wasn't an array, so we used the normal delete operator. We can also allocate a new integer and set its value. And that's with this syntax, with parentheses after the int. So the int is 3. And you may notice that this exactly matches the syntax we saw earlier for allocating a class and calling the constructor. That's not a coincidence. You can think of ints, longs, and so on as having a default constructor that sets their value to something unspecified and a constructor that takes one argument which sets their value to that argument, as far as how new works. And we have our allocating the array, and we have our two examples with rational. So the first one, where we don't have any arguments, that just calls the default constructor. It always calls the constructor. And the second one calls the constructor that takes a 3 and a 4. So any questions about any of these? Okay, so in the next lab, which some of you may have started looking at, you're going to be implementing a linked list in C++. And naturally, this will require use of pointers and use of new. because you can't just have a local variable which is all the nodes of your linked list. You're going to need to allocate them on demand. And so you're going to see this is our UML diagram of what you're implementing. You're going to have a list class which has a head and a tail, and it's going to have a bunch of list nodes that you're going to presumably allocate with new, and they have next and previous pointers to other list nodes, and we're going to have a list iterator class that points to a list node for iterating through the list. Any questions on this setup so far? Yes. Yes, so the three lines here indicate a null pointer, yes.
And so we could start those equal to zero.
Yes, so equal zero would be a way of setting it to null, or equal null, yeah, okay. All caps null would do that too. Yes.
So where is the head if you're pointing to null?
The head is indicated by our list class here. But each node has a next and previous pointer, so for the head, we make the previous pointer point to null, because it's the first node. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so I'm going to talk about a few things we haven't talked about that will appear in the code that we suggest. So one thing, is that to remind you that we have two pointers declared here because the star binds to the name. So like I mentioned before, this is two pointers. This is not a pointer and a pointer to pointer or something else. We have this thing called friend class list. And what that syntax says is that there is a class called list and it's a friend of this class. And as a friend, it can access the private member variables and member functions of this class. So that says that, therefore, that this next and previous can be accessed from the list class's methods. So you don't need to create public methods for the list class to call to manipulate the next and previous pointers. You can just do it in the list class. Yes? So the question is friend one way or two way? It is one way. So this means that list can access list node stuff, but not the other way around. We would need another friend declaration to do that. And so we have two friend declarations, since our suggestion is don't bother making list node some generic class, just put the logic in the list class. And there are two common mistakes I'd like to talk about. So first one is doing this. So what is wrong with this code here? Where foo might be list, but I just used foo. Why does this code not make much sense?
Are those methods in one file?
What?
Are those methods in one file?
Are these methods in one file? Assume I split things up into the HTTP files correctly. So what's wrong with this? Yeah.
With the new thing, you're creating something inside of the implementation of the constructor.
Okay.
Before we had to like put things inside with the colon.
So you're worried that I should be doing. So you're worried that I should be doing something with colons and that. It's not actually necessary to do that. I can assign it later because pointers will just, we don't care what they start out as long as we set them correctly. Yeah?
Should it just be head equals new list node because head's already been declared?
Yes, but this is a related issue that we want to initialize the head and not what we're declaring here, which is a local variable in the foo's constructor. Probably isn't useful. So we're creating a local variable head, we're making it point somewhere to a list node, And then the list node, then we return from the constructor, and this, these local variables go away, and now we have a memory leak. Because we didn't actually change the head member variable. So what we wanted to do instead was probably head equals new list node, or we could have done the colon syntax that you mentioned and set written head parentheses new list node. I believe, I think that's it. One of those two. Probably, given that you come from Java, you find head equals new list node in the body most intuitive. Okay. So another related problem we can have is doing something like this. So what's wrong with this? Another idea for constructing my list node. Why is this not a valid option? Yeah.
Is it because temp hasn't been initialized, so there's no memory?
So the question, is it because temp isn't initialized? So remember when we declare a class, like as a local variable like this, it calls the default constructor. So it actually is initialized, assuming list node has a constructor that does something meaningful. But there's is a still problem, yes.
You're going to lose temp once you come out of the
constructor. Yeah, so, but the problem is it's a local variable. It's going to go away. We have a local variable temp, has an extra brief pointer. We make head point to it. Then our function constructor returns. Now our head points to who knows what. Points to some memory that might be reused for something else. And both of these errors are the sort of thing which can be very confusing. So in this case, we have a pointer to something which used to be valid, and it's probably going to be overwritten. But that might not happen right away. It might take a while. You might have to have a bunch of local variables made before that happens. So you might look like it has acts like a proper next and pre pointer, and then suddenly it stops. And with the first one, when we didn't set the head in the foo object, or like your list object when you're making your list, and this might mean that we have it at its default value, which is probably going to be whatever was in memory there. And you might get lucky, and maybe what's in memory is a valid memory address. And you're setting something that you think is a list node somewhere, because the compiler looks at your pointer, it has an address in it, it goes there, acts as if it's a list node, manipulates it like that, but maybe something else ends up using it, and you get these really weird results. And this is something which happens in C++, because C++ is less careful than Java about letting you have pointers to things you aren't supposed to. In Java, when you have a reference, you know it goes to that class. There's no possibility it goes somewhere else. In C++, there are many ways of having a pointer which doesn't go to the type of thing it's supposed to be pointing to. And when that happens, the compiler is going to generate code which tries to use that space. And this can cause errors which are much weirder than anything you've seen in Java. Okay, so any questions about these things from the upcoming lab? So let's look through an example to show something about how new is working internally. And also to introduce a few extra operators that exist in C++, which are handy when we're reasoning about how our address is working and so on. So here I have this size of operator. And what I'm doing here is I'm saying size of long. So that's syntax to say how many bytes is a long. And because, unlike Java, longs might be 8 bytes in some machines, might be 4 in others, we have this operator because it's actually useful to know that often. And similarly, I can ask for the size of foo, which is a class. And that's how much space does it take up. I can also, like, if I have a variable x, I can do size of x. That is also a legal thing for me to do. Rather than entering a type in the parentheses. You can do both of them with this operator. So in this case, this code will print out the size, and it's always going to be in bytes. So a char is always going to be one. Other types might depend on the machine. So then we allocate two foo objects with new, and we're doing this funny thing where I'm converting the pointers I have to those objects to integers, to longs in particular. And I'm doing that with an explicit cast because if I just, you know, because otherwise I'm not going to get a long. If I just assign a pointer to a long to a pointer, C++ is going to tell me, that's a type problem. I think you made a mistake. So we need a cast to say, no, I really mean to do this. And I'm actually subtracting the two. And this should get the number of bytes in between the start of these two objects. Yes?
In the line under the one highlighted, should it be bar and not foo?
Yes, it probably should. Yes. Yes, it should be bar and not foo. Okay, so this gets the distance between them. And what would you expect this distance to be? So how would you, if you were implementing new, what do you think the simplest thing to do is? Yeah. Okay, so that's what the distance is the number of other things between them. So we have So we have a foo with an x and y, which is our, say, quux. And then we have a bar with an x and y. And what the distance we're measuring is the distance from the beginning of quux to the beginning of bar. So it does measure the number of things in between them, which is this space here. It also includes the size of quux because our pointers point to the first byte of the thing. They always point to the same location in an object. So probably the simplest way you might imagine implementing new is that, well, why should there be any space here? Yeah. Why should that happen? And if there's no space there, well, on our lab machines, this is going to print out size of long is going to be 8. So this is going to be 8 bytes here. This is going to be 8 bytes here. And we'd hope that we can store a foo object without wasting any extra space. So we hope that, therefore, size of foo is 16. Maybe it isn't, but hopefully. Otherwise, we're wasting space. And then there's not an obvious reason why we would need to allocate space in between, but maybe we would. The most obvious guess is that we'd get 16. So if we actually run this on something like our lab machines, this is a common one output you might get. So we get that our foos are, in fact, 16 because they are 16 long x plus long y, as we expect. But when we take the difference between the two addresses, we get 32. So somehow there's 16 extra bytes in between, even though there's nothing else visibly being allocated in the program. And this is a typical thing you'll see implementations of new do. And what's probably happening here is that new needs to keep around some extra storage to track what is called metadata. It needs to know for, like, where is the next space that is free? How much space am I using for this object? Where should I find my next object when I delete this, and so on. So there's extra storage to make new and delete work. Storage that we might not need for normal local variables where we can figure that out at the compile time. We'll talk more later in the semester about exactly how space for local variables is managed in contrast to this. Yes?
Is that extra space the same size for all objects, or does it vary dependent?
So the question is that extra space the same size for all objects? So this, it varies depending on what machine you're using. So there are lots of implementations of new. In fact, you can probably find some where there's no extra space, where they do need to store this extra data, but they store it in some other part of memory. I think on our Linux systems with the default new that it's the same for all objects up to a certain size. Well, that is like a size that might be like several kilobytes or something like that. But I'm not sure. Also, sometimes implementations of new will do things like if you ask to allocate 48 bytes, they might just round that up to 64 or something like that to make things easier for them. Okay. So any questions about this? So we've talked a bunch about, I guess I should mention one thing which no one seemed to remark about, which is that when I use cout to print out a pointer on our systems, it prints it out in hexadecimal. That's what that OX1EC4030 is. So we'll talk more about hexadecimal and all sorts of things about number representation later in the semester. But that's what's happening there. That's why there's an OX to implicate to you that it's not a decimal number. And the convention is that that's done, but you could print it out in decimal if you wanted to. Okay, so that's basically most of what I'm going to say about pointers. So I'm going to talk about the other type of thing that refers to another thing in C++, which is references. And C++ references are going to be a bit different than Java references. So here's an example of using a reference. So I have an integer x and y, and I make a reference to x using this syntax. So references are declared like pointers, but we use an ampersand instead of a star when declaring them. And when we create a reference, we choose where it refers to. And once we do this, it always refers to that. There's no way of changing it. So later on, when we do something which assigns to the reference, it actually assigns to the place it's referring to. So one way you can think of references is that this is equivalent as if we had a pointer assigned to x, and every time we used that, the name of that pointer, we did star p equals y. And we outputted star p. That it's as if, you know, after we assign, we have a pointer that we always dereference every single time. There's no way to not dereference it when you use it. And that's basically how references are implemented. They contain an address that's set when you create them, and from then on, they always use the thing at that address. Yes.
So the and in the int and reference to x rather than on and x, is that functioning similar to the asterisk in declaring that it is a reference type?
So is the and there, is that like an asterisk when we declare a pointer? Yes, it is exactly like that.
And then because it's a reference type, you can pass it a regular value and it'll grab the f.
Yes, and because it's a reference type, the syntax for choosing where the reference goes only when we're declaring it or initializing it otherwise is the same as just using the normal value and it gets the address of it.
Can we do the thing where we declare int and reference to x and then on a separate line say and reference to x equals x?
So the question is, could I do int at ref to x semicolon and then ref to x equals x? And the answer is no. You have to set it when you create it. Yes?
So if you clean up reference to x at the end of the line, is it going to print out 199 or 100?
So the question is, if I printed out reference to x here, what would it be printed out? And that would be 100 again. Because it still is a reference to x. Like there's no way of changing that after we create it. Assigning y to it takes the value in y and copies it into x. Like after we create a reference, there's no way of changing where it refers to. Yes. If we do x is equal to y, what is reference to x print? If at the end, then you set x to 99, and reference to x would print 99. So you can think of reference to x after we bind it, which is what initializing it like this is called, as an alternate name for x. So after its creation, in every sense, it acts like we wrote x. And the way this works internally is that it's a pointer that it's automatically direct, that we only set when we create it, and that's automatically dereferenced from then on. So we have no way of changing the address stored in the pointer. Yes? Yes. So one of the most common uses of references are, gosh, I'd like a function which changes the value I pass to it, and references let you do that. So by having a reference type as an argument, it's going to be initialized to what we pass in, and for references, that's going to take the address of that thing automatically and bind the reference to it. So when we use x, it refers to the address of whatever was passed in. And refers to the thing at that address. It automatically changes the real thing. So we can do that, and it works the same as the version with pointers, but it's perhaps more intuitive to call, perhaps not. You'll get varying opinions on whether this is a good idea or not. Like some style guides will say, don't do this because it's confusing for functions to sometimes change the values you pass for them. Some style guides will say, do this because I don't like seeing all these ugly ampersands in my code everywhere. So any questions on what happens here? This is our notation. Yeah.
In the code in the main, swap list pointers should be the star.
So the question is, should we have a star there?
With the swap list pointer.
So we want to create pointers, which we do with the address of operator. The star is for either declaring a pointer, which we don't do here, we do it when we define swap with pointers itself, or for dereferencing a pointer, which we don't want to do, we just want to create one. Yes. So because what's effectively happening is that it's doing int at, you know, the first argument equals x, because our argument was declared with as a reference. It's as if we initialized it that way as a local variable. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so I showed you references to ints. References work perfectly fine with classes. So you can do all the things you can do with a normal square with a reference to square without any funny syntax. So you might often see that for that because it's perhaps a lot less ugly than using a pointer. And all the same rules apply as we saw with ints, that you need to set it when you initialize the reference. Otherwise, it looks exactly the same. Okay. And so, just to review our rules. Scene, so we saw a pointer. You can set initialize a pointer to point with an address, q. You can create a pointer by using an ampersand to get the address of something. And you can get the value of y from a pointer with star. And you can initialize the pointer to point to y using either of these things. For reference, we make a reference be bound to y by doing this at initialization. We don't have another option which takes up multiple lines. And we just use the reference and then outputs the value being referred to, or otherwise uses the value being referred to implicitly. Okay. And as you saw with the swap function, the main use of references and pointers is to pass things correctly. So here, what's going to be the output of this? So here I have an int wrapper, very trivial. I have a function foo, which sets a value. What output should I expect? So who thinks it's A? B? C? D? No, most people have no opinion, apparently. So what's going to happen is that this is, it's not a reference or a pointer, so it's a value. So we're going to make a copy of the int wrapper to put it into our argument. It doesn't matter that it's a class and not a primitive type. There's no distinction of that kind in C++. So we make a copy of our int wrapper that contains 100, pass it in here, and then we change that 100 to 42 in that copy. And the copy is a local variable that goes away. And our original value doesn't change. So this is going to output 100. So what you'll often see done instead is if you want to modify it, you say, my function takes a reference. So here, we pass in, we set our int wrapper to 100, and we don't have a separate copy of the int wrapper. Instead, we have the something storing the address of the int wrapper from main, and we're using that int wrapper through that address and setting its value to 42. So this is actually going to output 42. And similarly, you could do this. So what's the output here? What happens here? Yeah. C, why?
Because you passed in a pointer, and then you didn't put the star in front of it, so you're referring to the pointer itself.
Yeah, so it crashes. You know, pointers do not have memory variables, and that's what we're asking for here. And that, so what we would need to do instead is something like this. Or you could have written with a star, whatever. And that will actually output 42. And you'll see both of these styles. And I guess we'll pick this up next time.